What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show. You are now listening to Footy Prime, the podcast, hosted by Danny Dicchio, Craig Forrest, and James Sharman.
Off air talking about muscle-bound athletes, and I thought it's kind of fitting considering there's four muscle-bound athletes here right now. It is Footy Prime, Sharman, Dicchio, Forrest, and on keyboards, Dan Wong. Hello, fellas. Quite the weekend of sports, wasn't it?
Magnificent.
All around.
Unreal.
Boxing, hockey, basketball.
Raptors on fire.
Jeez, record scores for the Raptors. Yep. Tyson Fury, yeah.
For the Carolina Hurricanes.
You know, I watched the start of the Leaf game to the point where he just came in, David Ayers, and they scored a couple of quick goals, and then I saw two breakaways from Carolina. Then I switched over to the fight. And I didn't go back, but I'm obviously on Twitter following. I couldn't believe what was happening. And it got me thinking, like, is goalkeeping, goaltending, like, the easiest job in sports?
what a dick.
He's been waiting for that all weekend.
Yeah. I have since Saturday night. Ooh.
That's what I was thinking.
Well, I mean, hockey, though. I mean, like, okay, what's more difficult, hockey goalkeeping, goaltending, or football goalkeeping? It's got to be football goalkeeping, right?
Oh, there's more elements to football goalkeeping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying that.
Be that good of your stick anymore.
It's a big bloody goal. You're not wearing pads. I mean, I understand that hockey has to a certain point. You can see the Martin Brodeur's compared to the Vesa Toskalas. There's a big difference there, right? But it's more positioning in hockey, I would think, than reflexes, isn't it?
Well, you've got everything else. You got to be a wide receiver, a center in basketball, a shortstop in baseball, a quarterback. You have to, distribution has to be good. You have so many different elements to football.
Is that right in hockey as well, Craig? Like, the goalkeepers or the goaltenders, whatever they're called, used to be small, but now it's totally changed.
Totally changed.
And all the goalkeepers are like massive units.
Yeah, and that happened with the equipment, really. So, like, going back to the 80s when you had guys like Richard Brodeur for the Vancouver Canucks was probably 5'6".
Small and agile.
Yeah, stand up.
Stand up.
I never went down on the butterfly ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Kirk McLean in Vancouver, 94, is probably the last stand-up or one of the last stand-up goalies.
Mm-hmm. And now they're 6'5", 6'6", a lot of these guys, right? They're monsters.
Yeah. And they used to be the forwards, and now they're goalies.
And now, and plus they got the padding. Now, I know that they reduced the padding somewhat in the last few years, but still, compared to the 80s, you watch an old 80s game on Leafs Nation TV or something from, 1986, Mike Palmateer, and like, what the hell is he wearing? It's like, like regular hockey pads. It's ridiculous.
Amazing what the Ovechkin's doing here in the scoring. He's got 700 goals. One of only eight guys.
Overshadowed, by the way, this weekend by a bloody Zamboni driver, but still.
But incredible what he's done in the modern era.
It's true, right? I mean, how does that relate to football, though? Modern, when you see Leo Messi scoring, God knows how many goals a season. Messi's probably a bad example. Just another striker scoring 20 goals a season, say, compared to the 80s when the fields were worse. But was the game that much different? Do you have to earn a goal more now than perhaps in the 80s, do you think? Or is it the opposite?
I don't know. I think when you look at a guy like Messi or even Ronaldo, those two guys, they're just in a different league of their own. They're talking about a goal a game. Like, it's just unheard of.
Mm.
I didn't think. I mean, somebody that scores one every two games at the top level, you're going to be your top striker.
Mm-hmm. But when you broke through in mid-80s, you were 6'5".
Yeah.
That's a pretty big goalkeeper for those days, right?
Yeah,
it was. You were the tallest player in the Premier League, weren't you?
Yeah, when for 3 years until, I can't remember who it was, another, I don't know if it was goalkeeper or there was an out player. But yeah, quite tall. I mean, goalkeepers, we had this when we were training with these youngsters last weekend, different size goalkeepers, and everybody wants tall goalkeepers.
They want the profile, yeah.
They want the profile, and it's hard to get around that for some of the shorter goalkeepers who are trying to make it, who are very sharp, very quick, but the profile doesn't fit so much, so they're battling against that. which is difficult. Not to say that short goalkeepers can't be successful. There has been some, but you have to be exceptionally good and quick. Like a Barthez at Man United, who is a sweeper keeper, needed something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Good with his feet.
You have to be great with your feet if you're shorter, for sure, and bring other things to the game.
In the game nowadays, are you looking for, in your goalkeeper, are you looking for, what's the most important attribute? Is it quickness, distribution, just that, still? But I mean, distribution is going to be more and more important,
at
right?
Academy level is different because we're developing players. I think at a professional level, you are kind of seen upon being efficient in keeping the ball out of the back of the net. I mean, there's a lot of guys, even look at the big boy at Burnley now, Pope, who's not very good with his feet, but he's come in since replacing the likes of Joe Hart and even Heaton, who's moved on now, and he's pushed himself into the England setup. But again, great profile, tall, very good at collecting crosses, good shot stopper, but not very good with his feet.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes back to the old school way of thinking. The goalkeeper is there, like the striker is there to score goals. Really, really, when you're from the outside looking at a striker and you're going, okay, does he link the play well? Does he hold the ball up? Does he make intelligent runs? Yeah, I look at that for sure. I'm in the development phase. But a professional stage and coach, you're thinking about, does the striker put the ball in the back of the net? What is his goals telling? No one's looking at Ronaldo's performances at the moment. They've seen that he's scored in the last 7 games in Serie A.
Yeah, 11 now, yeah.
So that's the big thing. And goalkeepers as well. They're seen, they're judged upon clean sheets.
Haven't the Ronaldos and Messis just made it more difficult for other strikers now, because they've raised the bar so high? You know, if you're a 10-goal a season guy now, that's really good, right? But when you're looking at these guys hitting 30 year after year after year, thinking, maybe it's not what it used to be.
And the assists, too.
Yeah, precisely.
Just machine.
They've ruined it for everyone. Messi and Ronaldo ruined football.
You know, going back years when Messi and Ronaldo came onto the scene, I never thought the modern game would ever see somebody that could score a goal a game on average.
Yeah. Well, you know, really thinking about the best players we watched, right, growing up, right? I mean, if I can pick one guy, you know, I see Zidane stood out to me as being, I can't imagine a better player than Zinedine Zidane. And that was just before Messi and Ronaldo broke through and thought, oh, Christ, boy, they're better.
But even at Liverpool, Shams, you had a goal scorer when I was growing up, Ian Rush, who was like a legend at scoring goals.
Mm-hmm.
I just think nowadays it's exemplified even more because of social media and because of the media attention to the game. But there was goal scorers back in the days.
Yeah.
George Best, Ian Rush, Clive Allens.
Jimmy Greaves, you know, you go even further back.
Kevin Phillips, who I played with at Sunderland, they banged goals nearly every game. They were in and about the goals fixture. So,
but were they guys that you just kind of noticed afterwards on the score sheet? Where, oh yeah, geez, Rushy had a couple today, or Clive Allen scored
three. I think Rushy was that guy. He was that fox in the box that he wasn't really going to give you anything outside of the 18-yard box. He'd make intelligent runs in beyond like opponents' defenses, but he banked goals. He was there. He was consistently up there. Yes, he had a good supporting cast along with him in that great Liverpool team back in the 80s and 90s. But again, he was a poacher. He got his big move to Juve. Struggled a little bit over there. But another example of, we had goal scorers back in the 80s, 90s, even the 70s as well. I just think nowadays we're very lucky that we're witnessing the likes of Messi and Ronaldo. But we still had those guys, maybe not at the high quality which these guys show, but we had them back in the day, Craig. You played against them many a time.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys like that.
Rushy dragged one out of my arms at Anfield.
Did he?
Yeah, I had control of it, and he was like, yeah, his foot stuck in there. And,
you know, got it out, dug around.
Pulling at it, seemed like an eternity, and then he finally dragged it out, and then tapped in the net.
But going back to this Zamboni driver, right, because I don't watch hockey, excuse my ignorance.
It's trade deadline day, Deitch, how dare you say that?
But my oldest boy was on the phone, and he was speaking to his friends, and they said, we've got to turn this game on. We've got to turn this game on. Apparently, the Leafs are playing against someone that has never ever played an NHL game before. He's sitting in the stands as a little bit of cover. He's a Zamboni driver. So I said, okay, let's put
on. And the Leafs are paying him.
And the Leafs are paying him as well. So
and he put a wee bet on it too, didn't he?
I put a little bet on it, yeah.
Fancy the
let
you?
Me down. No. 6-3 down. They were 25-1, so I've lumped on, and the Leafs let me down. Like they let
do
many
that
other
to you
friends.
Every time. I'm never sorry. Bet.
But anyway, so ever. I said, I have no idea what's going on here. How can this possibly be happening that an average Joe, pardon the pun, or anything like that, no disrespect to
Joe's out
to
there.
Ayres, whatever his name was, can come in a professional game and play in goal. So I was watching Connected afterwards with our good friend Brendan Dunlop.
It's called Sportsnet Central now.
Sorry, Sportsnet Central, whatever you want to fucking call it. So I said to him, I said, Dunlop, I can't get to grips with this. Can you tell me the equivalent of this happening in football? So he responded in a very, very sarcastic way.
This is during a commercial
this
break.
This is Brendan
probably,
Dunlop,
right?
Yeah, during commercial. He said, I think the equivalent would be a team having used all their substitutions and then lose their star goalkeeper, putting the wide winger in the gloves, and on that they get to use a police dog running up and down the wing.
A police dog? He's
to
calling
replace the winger.
David Ayres is a dog.
So I said, that doesn't make sense, Dunlop. You just used a totally off-topic example of using a police dog.
It's a good try, though.
As a winger.
It's a good try, though, Brendan.
Yeah. But he's an Aston rushing. Villa fan. So
he was getting like a countdown in his, you know, 5 seconds, and he's still, texting you and trying to think of something funny to say and failing.
I don't know. But can you think of an equivalent of it in
no,
football?
No, not the same. Remember Alan played for West Ham? First win or first Premier League appearance for West Ham a few weeks ago, months ago. That would be the only thing I would see is somebody who played lower divisions.
Oh, yeah. Martin Allen's boy. Martin Allen's boy.
Yeah. And then, you know, in his 30s, gets an opportunity to finally play in the top flight.
Yeah.
That would be the closest.
But he was signed to a professional contract, though, at least, right?
So yes, tell me this. Right. So this goalkeeper there is no wasn't even on a professional contract?
No.
No, the way it works is essentially every home venue in hockey has to have an emergency goaltender
okay.
in case two guys go down. He had to sign the waiver before going on the ice.
So he could play for
either team.
Both teams. Team.
He could have played for the Leafs, yeah.
Yeah.
He had a Leaf helmet on.
Yeah, I saw that. That was weird to me as well. And pads.
And pads too, yeah.
Blue pads.
So, but you know, we were talking, Craig, beforehand, and you were involved in the West Ham preseason match where there was a heckling fan in the crowd, and Harry Redknapp had enough of it and said, all right, let's see how good you are, right? And actually got him on the field playing in an exhibition game with West Ham.
Yeah, that's right. He was giving it plenty, as most fans do there. It was a preseason game, not a big crowd, some non-league. I can't remember all the details who were playing, some non-league situation. Might have been a testimonial, you know, the deal.
Yeah.
And this guy's giving it plenty. You guys are crappy. Went on and on. And so Harry's turned around and goes, oh, you're so good. Hey, put your boots. Which size are you? That's get the gear on.
Unbelievable.
Second half, he ran out.
So how was he welcomed by the players? He'd been given them all, and then he's playing side by side.
I didn't really take much note. There was sort of like, okay. It was just rather, I've never seen anything like it before. I mean.
How bad was he?
Harry was, you know, he wasn't great. Didn't get a lot of touches. He kind of hid behind players.
I think when I look at it, the only comparison, and I'm trying to look it up now, is when Graham Souness played George Weah's cousin.
Ali Dyer.
Ali Dyer in a Premier League game.
We were looking at that, yeah.
Yeah. Just on.
So the story is, so I forgot the story, right? And we're reading about it. So Graham Souness got a phone call from someone purporting to be George Weah. And it turns out it was actually
he was in need of a striker at a time.
Yeah. And it turned out the guy was actually Ali Dyer's university roommate.
Yeah.
And Souness bought it.
But he must have had training
you
sessions.
You think so, right?
Your thing. He must have had one decent session.
He put him on in a Premier League game. Lasted, I think it was a full 6 minutes.
He replaced Matt Letizia.
He replaced Matt Letizia, and then he came off, I think, in the 85th minute.
Yeah, he played actually quite a bit of the game in the end.
Yeah.
13th minute. He came on in the 13th minute and left Letizia in the 85th.
Oh, wow.
So he must have just been floating around, you know, not being involved, you know, and not, I don't know. Graham Souness, I mean, he's done some strange things in his career, right? But that has got to be the tops.
Yes.
Incredible. Like, he thought Weah actually was
calling him.
Giving him a good tip here.
And
just play lower.
And the guy told him, yeah, he's played 13 times for Senegal
or something, yeah.
And played for Paris Saint-Germain. Not a no-name club, yeah. Pretty big club, even back in those days.
Even in the modern day, yeah. I mean, with the computers and
yeah, I don't think there was.
This was 96, right? I think 96.
There was a lack of tinternet back then.
Tinternet.
Yeah. Tinternet.
Yeah, there was.
So let me ask you this then. Say you're desperate for a player, something happens football wise, and a shaman's in the stands or behind the scenes, and you've got to bring me on, right? And I'm crap. What's the best position to play me at? Just to not cause too much trouble.
Where we can hide you.
Yeah. Where can you hide a player best in the football field?
Or up front?
I think, yeah.
On an island?
You've got to either play.
You see my touch?
Up top as a nine or on the wings. You've got to keep them as far away from the goal as possible. Your goal.
Your goal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I believe anyway. So
you get the old players that go in from time to time.
Yeah, I went in goal once as well. It was like for the last 2 minutes of a game for Sunderland. Just collected a couple of crosses.
Did you?
Yeah.
You actually came for a couple?
Yeah. Didn't have no shots though, so thank God I didn't get
Was that with long hair? Or?
No, I had short hair back in the day.
It's kind of ruins the image now.
Interesting situation when the players go in because they have the difference being we're talking about air as you came in as an emergency goalie for Carolina, but if you have at least he has experience in that. He's a goalie at a decent level.
He's a practice
goalie.
But
when you put an old player in that.
Quinny went in goal quite a bit as well. I think he went in for City and Sunderland.
Yeah.
Big Niall Quinn, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we were just put in because of our height.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you can.
Come collect crosses. They didn't Pesci see.
Went in a few times. Paul Pesci Salido, he went.
Oh,
in
I would have chipped
times.
Him for fun.
I'm going to say. He's tiny.
Yeah. Inch high, private eye.
Inch high, private eye.
He was a decent keeper, though.
Hey, Dan Wonger.
Yeah.
You played like football, the other kind of football, right? Yeah. There's such massive squads. You can easily hide a crap player in that, couldn't you?
You just throw them on wide receiver.
Oh, yeah?
Because you don't have a lot of blocking. Right, you can't put him on the defensive side because you miss an assignment, someone's going the other way. So you got to play him on the offense. So offense, wide receiver, you never throw to the guy. Baseball, it's the right fielder, right?
Yeah.
Most people swing
right.
Swing are right-handed, so the ball going out to the right fielder doesn't happen very much, right? So, but for football, you throw them in that. Farthest away.
Just get them to run routes.
That's right. You can't even put them on special teams. Because if you say, hey, you got to be a punter or something like that, you've seen Canadian football, third downs are crazy because it's such a wide field. And if you have a crappy punter, it's a touchdown the other way or a missed tackle, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, that's interesting.
It's always the furthest. Like, it's basically the same.
So the winger, again, yeah. Do least damage.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was always great at hiding in games, right? Really good. Like, you wouldn't see me out there, right? I'd be just like, you know, tying my shoelace, you know, hiding behind some big fella. Yeah, exactly, yeah. But at your level, when you play professionally, every single player on that field must be wanting the ball at all times, right? Surely? Was there any kind of comparison to me, a guy that might hide a little bit out there despite being a professional footballer?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean,
how would that work? The professionals.
Daniel was a fantastic player. Everybody,
yeah,
brilliant. But away from home, he'd go missing at times, for sure.
I mean, on purpose. He just would have no interest in
nipples, it would always be an away game.
So not just playing badly, but we're literally just trying to avoid being involved.
Yeah,
must drive you up the freaking wall.
Like you really didn't. As much as he'd been successful at Old Trafford, especially in the FA Cup when they won 1-0 there, he generally didn't really. Like to play in games where he was going to be chasing shadows for 90 minutes.
Right.
Ayo Berkovic, another brilliant midfield player.
Yeah.
Away from home, you wouldn't see him as much.
But these guys that could be game breakers for you, they could win games by themselves.
Oh, yeah.
So as a teammate, you must be thinking, for Christ's sakes, Paolo, step it up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's those conversations.
Jesus. And as a goalkeeper, you can see it, right? Probably better than most.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Were you like mouthy? Were you like giving it to him on the field at the time?
No, he was a legend.
that's a key thing as well. So these players that players off flair that were very good at changing the game and just doing something extraordinary, were the guys that disappointed you the most at times? So when things got a little bit heated, or when you were a tough away fixture and you really wanted to count on them to kind of change something up, those were the guys that kind of went hiding. And those, that was disappointing for me. I played with a couple of guys like that.
Yeah.
Where you think, this is really your bread and butter. This is where us bunch of average Joes, like, we're going to keep working hard for you, but we're going to give you that opportunity to change something for us and maybe get us a goal, nick a goal at Old Trafford, whether it be from a set piece or try and get something on the counter at Liverpool or Anfield when you were kind of bunkering in. So you kind of really, really were disappointed by players like that. I'm not going to name names, but...
Name names.
No,
come on, I can't. It's been years names. Now. They're not listening.
It wasn't much that I had the experience of playing with guys like that, but I can understand what Craig's saying about like a Di Canio or Berkovic, who on their day were frightening, were unbelievable to watch, a joy to watch. Mm-hmm. But as fans, they don't see it as much as what the players playing with those certain... types of players could do to a team's morale and mentality.
Yeah. Like you said, is you're disappointed with them because you know how good they are and what they can do.
Would they be, would those guys like Kanye, would he be vocal to other teammates when they weren't pulling their socks up and playing hard enough?
Yeah.
So he could be a bit hypocritical?
A bit of both, yeah.
He's Italian. What do you expect?
You can say that. You can say that. I can say that.
I can say that. QPR had one. Sorry to interrupt you. QPR
an Italian? Had one. One of them?
They had a very, very good player. And Neil Warnock had him for a while. Tarabat. Adel Tarabat.
Adel Tarabat. Yeah. That's, gonna, yeah. And, that's a great example.
He drove certain players crazy. And there was times when...
Not much for not naming names.
I didn't play with this guy. So I just know because he played for my old club. And... the fans loved him. They adored him. But, like, certain players on the team just couldn't understand how he could get away with so much. And in the end, Warnock had pulled the captain to the side, Clint Hill and a couple of other, like, experienced guys, and said, look, we just have to go with the flow here. You have to understand that this guy's going to win you games when it's tight in the Premier League, or he's going to do something amazing, so we have to give him... Mm-hmm. The opportunity, but we also have to let him off when we're defending with eight players or nine players because he's sulking that he didn't get a free kick.
Yeah,
or,
it's almost like the luxury player. He's going to provide something for you, but at the other end of the field, not so much, right? Yeah, it's interesting.
Can I ask a question then to these guys? Because I just kind of go, so you know those guys who are amazing, and we've all done an amazing play in our life if you've been athletic and played sports.
Once.
Can they do it all the time, though, too? You know, that's what I always sit there and go, so we expect that of them, but can they bring it every single...
The true greats can, right?
Well, even the true greats have days off where they, you know, they had a bad sleep and they're, you know, like, that's where I kind of go, because I've had, like, you know, in my career, I had 15 great plays where people were like, oh, that's amazing. And then the other guys, the stars... They were, you know, 100 compared to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, but then there's the superstars. Because I don't think I ever played with a superstar. And maybe that superstar level. And have you guys ever played with a superstar? That's maybe the question. Because it's like a LeBron versus a Kawhi who are superstars versus, you know, I'm going basketball here because that's what I know. But, you know, and that's what I wanted. Like, have you ever played with a true superstar?
Well, I mean, we're talking Messi and Ronaldo right now.
Yeah.
Right? As a true superstar. They're in the, you know, LeBron sort of mold. Top players. They do bring it every game. And I think that's the difference between the very best and the good.
The top elite, yeah. But you even look at the top elite players. We're talking about Messi here and Ronaldo. And Messi has been an unbelievable servant to Barcelona. But he's been criticized because of his performances and successes with Argentina at the international level. So we're talking about a top, top elite athlete here who can change a game at any moment, but struggles to do it on the international stage with different teammates that he's obviously not training and playing with every day. Where Ronaldo, on the counter to that, has produced for his country. He's won the championship with Portugal. Mm-hmm. He's won.
He was on the sideline for the final.
Even though he was on it, he was coaching from the
sideline. But Portugal's been coached better than Argentina over the years and probably have more depth than Argentina. Is that fair to say from a teammate?
No.
Because I think people criticise, yeah? You think Argentina, Messi's underperformed for his country?
That's the argument.
Yeah, I think he's been unfortunate too.
So do I. I think he's had some great World Cups when he's done all he could possibly do, but it's not enough. And people have criticised him, and I've watched those World Cups, and this guy can't do any more.
You're telling me Portugal have more depth than Argentina?
No, well, you know what? In recent years,
no
look at Argentina.
No chance.
Portugal were fortunate to win that.
Oh, you are opening up a can of worms there, Craig.
Portugal.
Oh. No, but I agree. That was a dreadful Euro, and they won through defence, right?
Correct.
With some big goals from Ronaldo.
And they got through it, but... Ronaldo's done it wherever. I mean, he's played at a whole bunch of different teams, too.
Yeah. Club level, Champions League, won it wherever he's been.
Yeah. And carrying Portugal.
Yeah.
You know, most of them aren't in the same quality, obviously, as Real Madrid.
But Argentina, I mean, okay, you can name individuals. Sergio Aguero hasn't really performed for his country, if you want to call out Messi.
That's why
Javier Mascherano was
why
great
I'm
in his
calling
position.
Out Messi to a degree that it's his fault. I'm just saying he hasn't produced at the international level, which Ronaldo has.
You can't argue it, I guess, because he's got a championship to prove it.
Yeah,
right?
And Ronaldo, you're comparing Ronaldo playing with the likes of certain players throughout his Portuguese career. Yes, Portugal have a much different squad now. But look at the players that Messi has played with. Higuain, Aguero, Mascherano.
Well, Mascherano separately, right?
And they've had good coaches as well. Sampaoli.
Mm-hmm.
Bielsa, so, Maradona.
But I know. Okay. They're right there, I think, speaks volumes, right? I just think that, you know, having watched Messi for so many years with club and country, I think he's performed really well for his country. But I understand the criticism because he hasn't got the trophy.
Yeah.
But it's not on him. But Ronaldo fans love to say that and say, yeah, it's on Messi because there's always that yin and yang Messi against Ronaldo, right?
He was going to throw in his hat in playing.
Yeah,
he
did.
In the qualifying, right? He was so...
Behind the scenes, the issue with Argentina, behind the scenes, it was a complete train wreck.
Yeah.
Right? Politically. And, you know, was the heart there to play for them? I don't know. But there's a big issues there, whereas perhaps less so in Portugal.
I mean, there's, from a goal standpoint, you got the fact that South America's tough group, Commonwealth, is a...
Yeah.
Everybody's...
That's
strong.
A good point, yeah, yeah.
And Ronaldo shows up against the Faroe Islands. And, you know, and
I think we should just appreciate them both. You know,
exactly,
just because you love one doesn't mean you have to hate the other.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
But as a coach, though, Deitch, going back to players hiding on the field, can you read your team and read players and think that this guy, your central midfielder, who's usually very good, very, you know, engaged, just isn't engaged today? What is the reason for that? Why is that? Bring him aside. Can you read your team and see a guy hiding?
Yes. Yes, definitely so. We don't get much of it in youth football. But there's certain instances where we've either travelled for a long time the day before and players haven't slept or eaten properly, so I can understand that from being an ex-player. But there's certain parts of a game where it's very difficult for a left-winger to play against their right-back, who's a stud right-back, who's got the better of him, and that's where you kind of see the character come out from within that player, and you can see his real personality, whether he's ready to go toe-to-toe with this player that's obviously got the up on him at that moment in the game, or whether he kind of goes sheepishly into a hiding factor in the game where you're thinking, come on, dude, like, just get on the ball. You try to be positive with them and maybe even sometimes switch positions to see if they can get a little bit of confidence and get on the ball in a different area of the field. But a lot of the time... It's down to the character within that player and whether they're willing to battle that resistance and face that adversity in a way where they're going to show that they can compete and try to, as I said, go toe-to-toe, win the battle, the 1v1 duel, which we speak about, or they just don't fancy it all.
One thing you get in development, obviously, is different from the professional game, is a finished product, right? You've got a pretty good finished product and that you're coaching that group of players. But for development, for like Deitch and that level, you're going to come across a whole bunch of different scenarios, right? Even just personally, you know, what's going on outside the white lines with family, friends. The pressures of just growing up and maturing.
Well, is that where, as a goalkeeper, you obviously you can't hide, right? It's the one position on the field where you just can't hide because you can't, you know, take a game off already, can you, right?
I mean, people are like, oh, did you like playing for this manager? Did you play more for one manager? No.
Because everyone knows if you had a bad game.
They don't care. They're not going to be blaming the manager if you let one go through your hands or through your legs.
Whereas a striker, especially you play more 4-4-2, I guess.
Yeah.
You're a guy beside you most of the time, right? Was it easier to hide in a 4-4-2 than a 4-3-3?
Not really, because when you play in a 4-4-2, especially being the big target man, you're kind of that center, as we call it in the basketball, where you're that link for the team to get out and trying to relieve pressure a bit. So my job was to hold up the ball, try and relieve a little bit of pressure from the defense or the midfield that were coming under pressure, trying to buy a little bit of time so we can move up as a team. Or if we're further up the field, trying to create chances, little flick-ons, little combinations with the smaller striker that I was playing with. So no, you couldn't really hide. And hiding is a very strong word, because for me, I don't feel any player really wants to hide on the field. There could be all different things going on within the game. He could be very tired. He could be fatigued. He could be carrying a knock. The crowd could be getting on him, whether it be through, as we're seeing in present day, racism going on, whether it be some other slurs going on. It might be from just some trash talk going on between two players on the field, from opponents to players on your side. But I've rarely seen a player go hiding just because he doesn't fancy it on the day.
It's rare.
It's rare.
At that level especially, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If there was one player who you came up against on a regular basis who you might want to hide from, who was it?
Again, I didn't really...
You're 6'3". You're a beast. You're scared of players.
For me, I always had a tough game against John Terry because we would just go at each other all game.
Oh, yeah?
But he was just a big physical brute of a person.
Was he mouthy?
Yeah, he was mouthy as well. But we were both, like, he was an East London boy, I was a West London boy, so we would have a little bit of banter that way. But at the end of the game, we would always shake hands and we'd have a pint afterwards. But
Well, you're the type, you enjoyed the competition.
Play hard and
I actually struggled playing against smaller defenders.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
Why was that?
Because they didn't want to get close to me, where the big guys wanted the battle. They wanted the 1v1 duels.
Yeah.
Where smaller defenders... I'm feeling them. I'm always kind of... I know where they are. Where the smaller defenders, I had no fucking idea where they were hiding.
Getting a foot in there.
They were kind of looking where the ball was. They trying to stay... trying to stay away from me. Trying to nick in at certain moments when I'm receiving the ball. And they were always difficult to play against. Which is interesting because, as you said, you'd think a big 6'4" guy would be able to overpower a 5'10", 5'11" guy, but it was difficult playing against smaller defenders.
Do you have more issues, Craig, as a goalkeeper with big gnarly centre halves and set pieces, or big gnarly centre forwards?
Well, you got both on the corners.
Yeah.
You have the centre backs and the big forwards too.
But not so many big forwards, right? I mean, that's kind of gone out of the game, I guess. I guess when you retired, the Dickie O's were there with...
Really?
Well, it's the profile again, for the centre backs.
I mean, the 80s was sideways. The football went south as far as, you know, a product that was entertaining to watch.
You kidding me? No, it wasn't. Liverpool won every week. It was great.
Yeah, well, there were exceptions, of course. But there was a lot of it. You know, and then that Wimbledon situation with the Crazy Gang and how successful they were with a bunch of brutes, not... great technically, most of them. There were the other individuals. Wisey was pretty good as well, but people saw that and going, oh, we can actually be successful
playing that way. Yeah,
playing that way. But then it had its limitations, and I think over time we discovered that it had its limitations as far as what, and then you see what's happening in the modern game, which is, I think it's really, really refreshing. The games play really well. The pitches have a lot to do with it too.
Yeah,
the pitches were terrible. You know, they weren't looked after like they are now. They're like carpet. So, of course, you can, with the skill and the ability they have now on a perfect surface, to play around quite comfortably. It's good to watch. It's much nicer to watch the game now than what we went through in the 80s and that transition of a game that they thought was going to be the way to play. Basically, rugby without hands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How would today's teams fare in that era, right? be interesting, yeah, wouldn't it?
It'd be interesting. I mean, Wimbledon with that team would stay in the Premier League.
Right.
Still.
But they'd be out of footballed on a regular basis.
Yeah, they would stay in the Premier League.
Well, right. Burnley are kind of similar to...
Yeah.
Would that Burnley pulled off a good result at the weekend?
Would Ashley Barnes make the crazy gang?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd be up there. Maybe he has understudy to Fashanu, but he'd be up there.
Austria's Ashley Barnes, right? we should get to our actual topic du jour.
What is that today?
Well, I'm glad you read the emails. Thank you.
Mention John Terry.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a great segue from John Terry. Cheating in football. Not that kind of cheating. Not that kind of cheating.
Not yet.
Not yet. We'll see where the podcast goes. It's quite possible we'll end up there at some point. But, you know, I don't know if there's a sport out there which embraces gamesmanship more than the soccer, right? More than football. If you can get an edge over your opponent, over the referee, over the video assistant referee. God, what a weekend that was, by the way. You know, we seem to really embrace it. Should we just accept that footballers are sniveling, cretinous cheats and just stop complaining about it?
Well, that it is.
It really is, right? No. Even the nicest guys out there, once they cross those lines, become utter bastards.
Well, I mean, I always said this too. I mean, the game, because it's truly the world game, everybody's playing it, and the culture of the game is different from every part of the world. But one thing you have to remember, and a lot of people in North America, especially, you know, when we play this, grow up playing fair, tough, honest, the same thing with England too, it's very, you know, honest that way. These guys are coming from incredibly poor backgrounds, and you're going to give them a chance to win a game. They're going to win it any way they can. It's not being soft. It's not being anything other than them doing whatever they can to win games. And you watch the very best international teams and just the smallest little things that they do to get things changed around. I was surprised with the Arsenal game. You guys saw the Arsenal game, the first goal for Arsenal.
Against Everton yesterday?
Yeah. Luiz puts his head in, the boots high and dangerous. And one thing I was surprised by Luiz's reaction was he didn't have a reaction. But normally a Brazilian or somebody as sharp as that in a situation like that would grab his face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because the boot was high and it went to replay.
And it was a great bicycle kick by Calvert-Lewin.
It was a great bicycle kick, yeah. But his boot's right up next to Luiz's face.
So was it a mistake by Luiz not to sell it?
Yes.
Yeah, he should have made a big meal of it.
I see the very best international players, they're smart enough to make those right decisions at the right time to draw attention to the fact that the boot was high. And it was.
Is that what it is? All that kind of behavior is just to draw attention to it. Not necessarily trying to get the call right there and then, but over the course of 90 minutes, the referee might go, Christ, this center half is throwing his elbow a little bit too much, and I'm going to eventually blow the whistle. Mm-hmm. Is it a... You build up slowly throughout a game. Sure.
And then the art of actually getting a penalty. I mean, that is, it will never change that because the referees are looking for whatever and contact. If a player stays on his feet, won't get the call. But there is definitely an art to it.
So these
drawing penalties, drawing fouls.
Craig says that poor people are all cheats. Do you agree with that?
Well, no, I
that's what you said.
I think
people are saying they're winners.
They cheat to win, but they're...
Okay. I think what Craig is trying...
Craig shirt.
I think what Craig is trying to allude to is that it's a cultural thing. So we play against teams from South America, from Mexico, from Latino countries with our Canadian boys here that have grown up, as you said, a very honest... try to play in a fair way, and it absolutely drives me crazy at times when we're playing against these teams how naive we really are. But I come from a background or a development where it was frowned upon to go down. You know, you was kind of seen as soft if you went down.
You get called out by the media, you get called out by your teammates.
Yeah, even by the fans. But now I look at it and we've said to our players as well, you have to play a game within the game. You're not only playing against your opponent, you're playing against the referee who you're trying to get on your side, but to give you certain decisions. Because when we play against the Mexicans or the South Americans, they're fantastic at it. They're fantastic at managing a game within a game, whether it be a ball going out from a throw-in, and they've already grabbed the ball to kind of deter the referee from making a decision, where it's a 50-50. He doesn't know who has gone off. The linesman doesn't know who has gone off. But the player from the opposing team's already got the ball and he's taking the throw-in. So yeah, the referee said, okay, we continue.
Yeah.
Small things like that, or just any contact, they are going down, whether it be from behind, from the side. And we just still have such a naivety. And I got to commend our players with their honesty, but they've got to start really understanding the game within the game and how small details can win you games, can win you set pieces.
When you're playing against them, who the referees are, what their tendencies are, completely different in CONCACAF.
I was going to mention that, CONCACAF. I mean, how many times did you play and you were CONCACAF'd?
Well, a lot.
Pretty much every game.
Pretty much every game.
Yeah.
But on the other
hand, was that naivety?
Like, we same as, oh, yeah, absolutely. Totally naive. Again, they want to win at all costs.
Mm-hmm. But you knew. I mean, you played down there. You knew what to expect,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Would you talk to your teammates, the less experienced ones, saying, guys, you don't know what's going to transpire here. Prepare yourself. But they still didn't get it?
No, they got it. I mean, it just comes naturally to some, not to others.
Right.
But like I said to Carlo Corazine in the final of the Gold Cup, like, you get in the box and somebody makes some kind of contact to you, don't be a hero. Get yourself on the deck.
Yeah, yeah.
And he got a penalty. Not that it wasn't a penalty; it was pretty clear cut. But get yourself on the deck.
But
put the referee under some pressure.
So we're talking about on the field cheating here, okay? So called cheating, but that's part of the game. How about
according to you?
How about Craig, off the field cheating?
You mean like Man City, for example?
I'm going back to 80s and 90s now, where we would turn up to certain stadiums, and it could be the middle of summer. And certain clubs would have the heating on in the changing rooms, the locker rooms, at full blast.
That's interesting. Home field advantage, really.
Certain clubs as well had their coaches listening through the vents, your team meeting.
Really? Yeah.
That's cheating, in my opinion. Certain people looking at your cheating? Set pieces, your set plays that are hung up on the wall when you're going out for a warm-up.
But isn't that up to you to be smart enough to make that available?
Well, we found out throughout the season when certain players, similar to what the Astros are going through now, when certain players are left certain clubs, it would come out that, hey, you know that certain coach or that certain manager, that certain club, they do this within the locker room when you visit their ground.
Well, is that one thing when you get a new player into your team, into your club, and you're playing his former team, is it okay if he just gives away all the tactics that he knows or how that coach works? I would think it would be. Is it not?
Yeah.
Right. It is, right?
Yeah.
Again, isn't that part of the game?
Yeah.
To try and get the win.
Right. Yeah. But that's fine though. You know, you buy a player from Team B.
Yeah.
And you're playing Team B, then you want to get an insight.
Pretty much everybody knows by watching. Everybody watching Liverpool, they're brilliant, but everybody knows what they're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. But
one of their players comes along and tells you.
But if that player says, you know, like, the goalkeeper is terrible to his right, I guess you know that already. There's been enough scouting, right?
Yeah.
But I would think, what about injuries? Yeah, what about if someone comes?
You're not going to have a goalkeeper.
But what if you say, you know, the goalkeeper's got a bit of a dodgy right knee? You know, he's playing hurt right now. Or the centre back's got a rib injury.
We would always have, like, players that had moved on or gone to different clubs, and they would still have friendships within that team. And certain coaches or managers would say, listen, do not be leaking out any information to Joe's obviously joining the team we're playing tomorrow. Right, let's keep everything. But players spoke to other players. They'd give texts, say, hey, how's Shams doing? How's his left hammy? They'd be like, oh, he's struggling a bit. Didn't do training today. So that would be part of maybe the tactical talk that we do on the Friday. And there'd be certain set pieces or certain plays that club were renowned for, or that coach was known for. Listen, they're going to put their first corner to the back post and drag everyone to the near post. So just be aware of that. Certain aspects of that. But as Craig says, the teams are scouted so diligently now. Mm-hmm. It's not really a shock what they're going to do to you. It's just how efficient they can be at what we know they're going to do. and how we can kind of defend against that.
It's amazing that my dad, when he'd make me play for the other team, had no concerns about what information I might pass on.
Let him have the ball.
It'd be like, I can picture my dad in the huddle with the team saying, "Don't worry, fellas, I've got rid of him. He's playing for them today. Yay! Amazing." God.
We've got to get your dad on the show. I want to get your dad on the show because I want to get deep down and get to the bottom of this and why he traded you every game.
Yeah, exactly.
Last scene of Breakfast Club. Nelson with his hand up. Get him off the team.
I'm worried about his mental health.
I know.
Poor guy mentions every it every
show. I know.
Every show.
Yeah, get my dad on this podcast. Then we can get into some political discussions. See where it goes.
We should get my dad
and my dad.
And your dad.
They're going great, I think.
Oh, my dad's all over Brexit at the moment, my old man.
You know, often sports teams have like the fathers and mothers games, they bring them aboard, and they treat them really well. I mean, we won't treat our parents well, but we'll bring them aboard.
Hey, you get my dad an espresso, some panettone, he'll be here.
He'll be all right.
He'll be fine.
But yeah, I mean, cheating is, like you said, it's innate in football, whether you call it games and shit or whatever, but off the field as well, in the negotiation room, bungs being passed back and forth, despite what they might say now, it still happens, right?
There's money involved too.
Yeah.
You're going to see match fixing and things like that, a real cheating of the game. People that are making lower divisions, making no money, they're going to be susceptible to a opportunity to gamble and make some money that we've seen that happen.
And that's where match fixing is so prevalent. You don't see it so often in the top leagues. You see it in the lower leagues.
Body protect themselves or certainly protected or try to by having 50 or 60 of the top gambling sites that will be policed, and if there's any irregular betting, that'll be.
But there's so much gambling in football, though, right? The players are I don't want to cast them with the same brush. Let's be honest.
The sponsorship
right?
on the shirt.
Yeah, well, it's so hypocritical, right? Yeah,
sites. Everybody wants to be part
but
of it.
But in the room, gambling is a part of the football culture as well, right?
Is it? I'm not going to lie, guys. I won a lot of money in the 90s
right?
Through gambling. We had a play at our club where it was very, very stupid on the betting companies that they would put down bets for everything. Like the first moment the ball would go out of play, players that would get yellow cards, random stuff. Like first time a goal kick happens. So we had a play that me and a couple of friends would bet on the first time the ball would go out of play. So if we won the kickoff, the coin toss, we were in the money because the two friends, teammates, would stand in the center circle because you had to play the old kickoff, play forwards, and I would go and stand out by the sideline, ready for that deep ball towards the sideline. So we would always bet on the first zero, I think it was 0 to 10 seconds, the ball would go out of play. And it was silly bets. It was like 20 to 1 every time. So if we won the kickoff, the coin toss, I would go stand out by the sideline. They'd nudge it a little bit, and they would overhit the ball to me on the sideline. I'd try my best to get up there and head it.
What level was this? Are you talking?
I can't talk about the level.
You can't say what level? Okay, so it's clearly Premier League.
But we won a lot of family vacations and boys' vacations and even
I've lost so much respect for you, Deitch. My love of the purity of the game has just been tarnished by you in this. It's just awful, isn't it? You would never be involved in anything like that, right, Craig?
No, never.
Actually, absolutely. West Ham and Wimbledon were the worst guys. They were the ones that...
So everyone did it, is what you're saying.
Oh, it was a known thing in the 90s, and then the betting companies put a block to it.
Well, we had the one...
they must have lost a lot of money.
I guess so.
We had the one at Upton Park where, we had nothing to do with it. It was an Asian black market gambling syndicate. Do you remember the...
That's right, the floodlights,
Selhurst Park, where there was Arsenal against Crystal Palace, or Wimbledon maybe, because Wimbledon was sharing that ground at the time.
Yeah, it was Wimbledon. It was at Selhurst Park.
And then the game was abandoned, and then it happened at Upton Park. But in the Far East, gambling, the results will stand after an hour. So even though the result would be abandoned, the game would be abandoned for gambling purposes in the East, it would stand. So we're playing Palace at Upton Park. Frank Lampard ties it up, I think, in the 63rd minute. I remember running off to the sideline doing the celebration, and the lights just, every light in the stadium, out. Even backup lights, emergency lights, everything done. And they blew up. They had a bomb in the...
It was actually a bomb, right? Yeah. Actual bomb.
A bomb. Remote control in the stand. And the guy just hit it and blew the whole power room up. And you were never coming back.
That's incredible.
They were eventually, nobody knew what that time was going on, but they were eventually caught because they tried the same thing again at Charlton.
Yeah.
And that's when
they must have made millions on that, by the way.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. Those gambling syndicates, I mean, they still are very prevalent, you know, and you can bet on the lowest leagues you can imagine, you know, if you find the right website, right? And there's always that one spotter at some of these lower division, even Canada, you know, I mean, our good friend Ben Rycroft's done a lot on this over the years at CBC, before leaving CBC, having the gambling syndicates betting on lower league Canadian soccer, and there's a guy in the stands just on his phone continuously. You seen it?
In the CSL, we used to play, the TFC Academy, the oldest team, used to play in the CSL. I used to go and watch games, scout games, and there was always a guy in the stadium or the stands that was relaying the game back to China or wherever it was. Where
they had live betting.
They had live betting.
Exactly.
Goal kick, still 6-0, whatever, goal kick, corner kick, and they were just constantly relaying this back to the Far East, and he's sitting in the stand by himself.
Yeah, this is Toronto, Croatia versus Serbian White Eagles. I'm going, why is this being relayed? Is this live on TV or what's going on here? And it was a guy relaying the game back to the...
Yeah.
We must get Declan Hill. We'll get Declan Hill at some point.
Came over and had some friends playing in the league.
Mm.
So you can gamble on this. There's nobody here. This is the easiest fix in the world.
And how easy is it to get to those players as well? Right,
exactly.
These guys aren't making much to play these games, right? And here's $5,000, here's $10,000. What?
Yeah,
it's significant, right?
Yeah.
No, we'll get Declan Hill. He'd be a great guest, Declan.
He would be a great guest.
Haven't heard from Declan for a while. No one knows more about this subject than him.
Yeah, no, he's brilliant.
Yeah, have you guys ever been approached back in your careers to if not throw games, just do something apart from your teammates and throw ins?
No, it happened to the Canadian national team soon after the 86 World Cup when they went out to Asia.
Mm-hmm.
There were some opportunities, and some players took some money back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's still exists, unfortunately, right? But it's hard to get the top leagues, obviously, because these guys are so well paid to begin with.
That's the difference.
You know, offer $10,000 to someone to throw.
Yeah.
I'm making $10,000 in the first half, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Bruce Grobbelaar went through his issues.
Yeah.
Liverpool and Hannah Sagers.
Yep.
Fashion him.
I remember a funny situation that we had in our infamous Lecce.
Yeah, tell us the Serie A stories, didn't you?
This was a brilliant one. So when I signed for Lecce, Prandelli was the coach, and I told you about our president, who was a little bit crazy, aloof, used to carry the pistol in his belt pocket. So we were playing, I think we were playing Brescia or Atalanta at home one game. So the president had come into the locker room before the game, as he usually does, and he goes around and speaks to everyone, good luck. And I just noticed he spoke to a couple of the experienced guys saying, we know what result we want today. And I didn't really take it in at the time. But when I'd signed, a young player had signed from Brazil who did not speak a word of Italian. And he was very... very out there, very as flamboyant as you expect from a Brazilian, did what he wanted. Even when the coach told him to do something, he would do what he wanted on the field. So we were 1-0 up in the game, and myself and him were on the bench. We came on in the game, and the opponents had scored. They scored the equalizer. Last 5 minutes of the game, the Brazilian kid, I flicked on the ball, the Brazilian kid goes for a goal and scores. So we end up winning the game. He's jubilant, whatever it is his first goal. I can't remember the guy's name. But so we go back into the change room, the locker room after the game. And everybody, for the most part, is pretty happy. But I've noticed the experienced kind of pros are kind of sat down in their room like that. And then the president comes in the room and he starts fucking swearing. What? What's going on? The fuck did this kid want? And I'm like, hold on a minute.
We just won the game.
Like, we're freaking relegation trouble here. And he's worried about that. And I later found out that they put big money on the draw.
Wow.
They Brazilian kid had no idea.
Of course.
He was sent, like, I didn't even see him again. He was literally gone the next week.
But you weren't approached or told about this?
No.
So, I mean,
we were totally kept out of it. Just the veteran players? I'm kind of thinking the veteran players were involved with it, the president. Yeah. They'd been there a long time.
Or they thought you were so insignificant. You wouldn't, each one would be an issue.
He wouldn't be an issue.
Each year, not the problem today. The
problem. That's why we brought him in.
Yeah. Perfect.
He would never score a goal. But his Brazilian game, well, he scored his first goal, and I was so upset for him because he got lodged back to Brazil or wherever he come from the week
later.
He's
probably still thinking to himself, "All this, what the hell happened there? I scored the bloody goal. And I was jettisoned off the next week.
Yeah, I thought I did all right.
Yeah.
President must have got a pistol out and set him on his merry way.
But some of those Italian stories are right. I mean, how the corruption behind the scenes. I mean, Calciopoli obviously is the head of it. And, man, they dealt with that harshly. If you think about that, you know, Juventus, who was essentially the Manchester United of Italian football, being sent down to the third division. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yes.
There
was dark times back then in Serie A. There was a lot of corruption going on. I think there was a lot of involvement from the mafia as well. And they just couldn't get a hold of things. Even the officials were involved. And that's why Juve went down. Milan were involved as well. And it was a dark time that it's taken a long time for Serie A as a whole to kind of recover from. And now it's in a good spot.
Better place. It's growing again.
It's a more solid foundation there, more trustworthy kind of supposed owners that are putting money into.
Well, you've seen the Maradona documentary, right?
Yeah.
On HBO. It's really good. And they really follow him in his Napoli days and who he hung out with and who was the power brokers of Napoli and the Serie A. And they weren't just businessmen, shall we say. You know, they were connected people. Yeah. Very connected people who hung out with certain other people, and it was pretty obvious, and it wasn't even kind of hidden.
No.
No, Napoli was run by mobsters.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, incredible. And they bring him with Diego Maradona, who's like, what? Okay, that'd be a good party. I'm going there. And I said, my new best mate. Do you know who he is, Diego? Yeah, but great, there, great documentary. Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. Yeah, cheating in football. Well, who knew? We all knew. Every single person knew. Where else? Before we leave today, I mean, we're talking about cheating in football and the various issues in on the field, okay? Back to that. Nothing annoys me more, I think, than the grappling and grabbing off players in the box and free kicks and corners. You see it every week and every, you know. As a goalkeeper, it must have driven you crazy, but in a good way, right? Did you encourage your centre-backs to grab hold of the striker and tackle into the ground?
Their job was to make sure that their man didn't score a goal.
Is that a problem though in the game, do you think? Do they need to deal with that?
It'd be interesting. It'd be opening up a can of worms if they start calling everything on corners.
Mm-hmm. Is it 50-50 though, Deitch? Yeah, I mean, you're a big guy, physical guy in there, you know, is it a bit of both?
It's a part of the game that I think for a long time it was kind of shunned upon and a referee turned a blind eye to it. And then I thought after the World Cup, after like England got, I think, 5 set pieces, whether it be free kicks, penalty kicks, I thought they were really going to stamp down in it. FIFA said they were going to stamp down on any kind of contact within the penalty box. Any pulling, shoving, picks, blocks, whatever you call it. But it seems like it's kind of transcended back to what it used to be now. And it's a part of the game. It really is. Unless it's totally, totally
blatant
that it's a pull, like you can see the actual jersey shirt being pulled or someone's holding an arm.
Well, isn't that the big dilemma, though? Football, it is a contact sport, right? It's not a collision sport. Yeah. It is a contact sport. A bit like basketball, right, in some regards, that there is going to be physicality in certain areas of the field, and we shouldn't shy away from that. You know, obviously, you don't want to see what it was in the 80s with the, you know, the two-footed challenges, the brutal football, but it is still a tough game, and there should be a bit of this and a bit of that in the area and in certain confrontations, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But it's a gray area, though, right? So where's the line drawn?
Yeah, no, it is a gray area.
I think when a player's health or like if there's bodily harm involved, whether it be an overzealous challenge or like an elbow to the face that is knocking someone out, that's when people have to kind of look at. That's what they're trying to stamp out. But as I said, growing up in England, it was partial compared to where I went to Italy in Serie A. And it was amazing in Italy. I was like at corner kicks, free kicks, and my marker is basically got both arms around me. He's not even looking at the ball. So I'm looking at the ref as this guy's basically bear hugging me and not letting me get anywhere near the ball. But that was how they defended back in Italy.
But it's funny, right? Italian Serie A, as an example there, you know, it's got this reputation over the years of being full of divers, right, and cheaters. But it's also one of the most physical, nasty leagues to play in as well, right? So it's kind of a bit of this and a bit of that. Yeah, they do dive, but also watch yourself, man, because there's some nasty footballers out there.
They know how to defend as well. Yeah. From a young right. age, it's instilled in them how to defend 1v1, like 2v2s in the block, how to protect the goal. They do it very, very well. But it was kind of alarming to me to say, there's no calls at all here. Like, I'm going for a header and I'm being dragged down by my shorts, yeah, and the referee's playing on. Or it's just, it was
that's why there is
interesting
differences when you're playing. Like I said, knowing who the referees are, knowing the league you're in, knowing exactly all these nuances that are different from different parts of the world, from different leagues to another.
Referees for sure, right? Like, you knew if your John Moss was refereeing, for example, would be different to Mike Dean.
Yeah. I had never had any problems with English referees, really, for the most part.
No. Who was the best?
Well, you knew they were always honest, or they weren't trying to do anything other than just call the game as they saw it.
But was one that, as far as I was, you knew that, okay, this guy, good. We've got Howard Webb. Or
Milford was good. Remember Roger Milford, the guy with a grey kind of flow?
Yeah.
He was from Bristol. He was excellent. He used to let the game flow, but he would talk to you, give you a little bit of banter, and very, very good. And then I remember one instance I had with the great Uriah Rennie, who was a total dick at times. But I played a game about 3 weeks earlier, and we'd had a battle, and he wasn't giving me many calls, and I said, "You're the worst referee the Premier League's ever seen. Go get back on your fucking Harley Davidson." You're thinking more.
He was a biker.
That. I don't know. He was doing all.
You don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, no. I saw something. Yeah. He had something in a magazine where he was on a Harley Davidson, and like, he was a show. Like, he was all about the show. And then 3 weeks later, we had a home game, QBR against Sheffield United. I remember. No, it was West Brom. Sorry. So, the first 5 minutes of the game, like, a big challenge has come in, and it's a blatant foul. The guy's gone through me, and I've kind of staggered back up, and Uriah's looking over me, and he said, "You and your gaffer are not getting any calls today. So get used to it, Sonny."
Wow. Really?
Yeah. So, and I went to report him after the game, reported it to Gary Megson, who was the coach at the time, because I think Uriah Rennie was from Sheffield and they'd had some previous. And I just said, "Look, this is what the referee had said to me during the game." He said, "Right, we're going to report it to the FA.
And did they?
Nothing ever came of it. The FA always backed the referees.
Yeah. Wow. That's good.
He didn't last long, though, did he? He ended up drifting out, because I don't think they liked the fact that they didn't want the referees being the
show. Well, look at Mark Clattenburg, right? I mean, he was the show, but then he left on his own volition. I think he had enough of the abuse.
It's a shame with Uriah Rennie, because there's not many black referees within the league.
Yeah, it's
so
true, isn't it?
It was, I think it was a good opportunity for him to show that.
Open the door.
We want more black referees or referees of color to come into the league and be professional. But he was just such a twat, the way he behaved and off the field, and just the smirkiness he went around the field with.
Even in the warm up, he'd be running around the
pitch. Yeah, like
very odd.
So, who was the best referee then that year? Was the one guy that you liked,
like I said,
to play for? No problem at all, eh? Compare the Premier League referees to, oh, I don't know, CONCACAF referees.
Different world.
You couldn't trust them, right? You knew that they were, you were playing against 12?
Well, I mean, back in the, you know, CONCACAF era where Jack Warner was in charge and, you know, knew the deal there. It was difficult. You felt like you were playing against 13, the referee and Jack Warner.
Yeah, right. That's unbelievable, like, isn't it? How do you get up for a game knowing that you're facing just so many obstacles?
Well, why would they? I mean, you think of the Gold Cup. Why would they want Canada in the final?
They wouldn't, no. Of course not. Disaster. It's the worst.
The Coliseum's empty.
Yeah.
When Mexico and US are playing, there's 80,000 there.
Yeah.
You know, so from money standpoint, all those standpoints, you're up against it. We don't travel anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't like...
Jesus.
I always like...
friends of the game.
I always liked a referee that had control of the game, but without using his whistle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he understood the flow of the game. He understood when to be kind of demanding on the players to keep their role within the game at a good intensity, but not to go over the edge. Guys that use their whistle every bloody 30 seconds, a minute, for me, that shows that they want to be the center of attention, where really the game is what people are coming to watch or what mm-hmm. players want to play. They don't want to stop start. They don't want a referee to be talking to them for 30 seconds, a minute. They just want the flow of the game.
Do you think refs should have to talk to the cameras after a match and explain certain decisions?
I don't know if them individually, but I wouldn't mind if the authorities would come out. And I think they have done some of these VAR calls have come out and sort of messed up. You know, I'm okay with that.
But like a referee, say Mike Dean, you know, after a controversial match, straight away like the players do, like the coaches do, have to.
Yeah, no.
That's tough, right?
Like, that's tough, yeah.
I think I like it.
It's a tough job, right? Let's be honest. It's such a tough job. And
impossible job.
Yeah.
And they do really quite well with it, all things considered.
Mike Dean was on the Peter Crouch podcast, I think last week. Really, really good interview, actually. It generally isn't that podcast. But yeah, it's interesting getting inside the mind of a referee, a really well-known referee as well, a guy that a lot of fans hate because they assume that he's against their team, which is crap, I think. You never saw a referee being biased, surely, aside from Uriah Rennie, right? They're obviously football fans, right?
They being biased. He was just being not a giving, twat. Yeah, me any calls or our team.
But was there ever? Do you ever feel that this guy specifically is against our team?
Certain grounds, for sure. Like Old Trafford.
So that was a thing, Old Trafford. It wasn't just a myth.
Old Trafford, they get the calls.
I think it was Webb that did our 9-0 game.
Oh, was it?
I think so.
Should have been 7.
Well, he was cheering during it.
Yeah, I thought he was cheering. He was
celebrating.
So
he kind of went over to one.
Yeah, he was like the naked gun, wasn't he? He was like, steer!
he's in town, right, Howard Webb?
Is he?
This week, the Ontario Soccer Association
maybe.
Have their...
We need to get a referee. I'm going to get one of my friends on that's refereed in the CPL, maybe Dave Barry or even Joe Fletcher, who's a linesman in the World Cup.
Still one of the greatest ever gifts in referee history, Joe Fletcher, right? When he went to shake hands. Have you seen that, Wonga?
No,
he's in the World Cup, right? Who was he? Was it Portugal? Maybe in Ronaldo. He went to shake hands, as you do, but I guess the player just didn't see him there, right? And kept walking. So rather than he did the old reach his hand out and then brush the side of his head, he was amazing.
He's a really funny guy.
He's a good guy, Joe.
If we can get him on, he'd be good to have on.
We'll do a referee edition for sure. Yeah. We'll reach out to Declan Hill. Any other suggestions out there for guests, people? Let us know. Yeah. We can't pay anyone. We've got no money.
That narrows down
a little bit. Anything else you want to get to, fellas, before we say... farewell.
I'm not mentioning it today. I've refused to talk about it. You've already mentioned it, but I'm refusing to talk about it this weekend.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it.
VAR.
Yeah, I know. I just refuse. I'm so sick. I'm so bored of it. Well, we get a referee on. We can talk about it, maybe, right? It's just
not talking about game.
Game's gone, Deitch.
Get it right, though. You're gonna do it.
Yeah, that's right. Get it right.
Fucking right.
If it takes more than 10 seconds, it's not clear and obvious.
Yeah, he'll get it right.
You think so? Well, it's not going away, is it?
Eight, unfortunately. 8 minutes, 22 seconds this weekend. Lyon versus Metz.
He thinks VAR is like, they'll get it right.
Oh, yeah, I know. Well, it'll be there in 10 years now and 20 years now, unfortunately. So, all right, well, we're out of time, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that. Enjoy the trade deadline, by the way. Is there ever a more sobering day working in sports media in this country and trade deadline day when you realize just how unimportant everything is except for hockey?
What's trade deadline in
hockey today, So each of the networks has 47 analysts on talking about deals that probably won't happen.
We should have done it. We should have done it. Trade deadline day.
Remember the Sky? Well, it used to be deadline day, right? And there is deadline day in football. And
no,
Sky.
We should have done it for hockey.
For hockey? You think so?
Yeah.
Trade all the Leafs.
I have no idea, how to pronounce the names, it would have been pretty good banter.
Deech Explains Hockey would be a good segment, right? Remember we're going to do Deech. We thought about
Deech Explains
bourbon Brexit.
Guy.
Remember that? And Brexit happened. It's kind of.
Oh, God. That would be a cracker. We'd be throwing each other through that window.
It's amazing. It's amazing, dads, eh? How you can love them so much and hate them as well at the same time. All right. Hope you enjoyed that, everyone. Don't forget, give us a follow on Twitter, footy_prime, and then on Facebook and YouTube and everywhere else. Instagram, it is Footy Prime, the podcast. Our thanks to our home away from home, deanblundell.com. Some great pods, by the way, on Dean's network there. And, of course, our thanks to Eggplant Picture and Sound for this wonderful studio. Hopefully it's sounding good. Dan,
yeah,
is it going to sound good?
Yeah.
Better than the first 4 minutes last week? All right, we'll see you next week. Cheers for listening.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show. Show.